From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, the Paycheck Protection Program being administered by the Small Business Administration is now out of money. An effort to add $251 billion more dollars to the program was blocked earlier today by Senate Democrats. Will they continue to block the measure, increasing the number of Americans laid off and forced into the unemployment lines? North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer joins us in just a moment. And the president is expected to announce new guidance in about an hour from the CDC that reopens America. I reviewed a draft of the guidance earlier today. We'll talk about it later here on Washington Watch. And confidence is increasing in something you heard here over 2 months ago.
Many people suspect that this coronavirus escaped from a P4, that's the highest level biosecurity lab, which is located about 20 miles south of Wuhan.
That was Gordon Chang on February the 10th here on Washington Watch. He'll be here later with more on the mounting evidence that the virus did not originate at a wet market. Speaking of the coronavirus, big social media giants like Facebook and Twitter are now censoring content that they believe falls into the category of quote-unquote coronavirus conspiracy theories, like what Gordon Chang was just talking about. But there is more. Guess who is advising them? You're not going to believe it. Texas Congressman Louie Gohmert joins me for that conversation. And my friend Ralph Reed has a new book out, For God and Country, The Christian Case for Trump. He is here to tell us about it later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, ran out of time yesterday, and I was not able to give you the results of the poll question. Actually, my phone blacked out on me. The question was this: do you support the president withholding funding for the United Nations World Health Organization, which aided in China's initial cover-up of the severity of the coronavirus? This has never happened before, but 99.999% of you said yes. One person said no. That's never happened before. Hey, by the way, let me remind you, get the Stand Firm app. If you've not yet gotten the Stand Firm app where you can listen to Washington Watch wherever you go and have contact with your members of Congress and alerts as to what's happening right there in your pocket on your smartphone, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and download the new Stand Firm app. All right, coronavirus. The coronavirus continues to run its course in America, and small businesses, which employ 47% of the workforce, are feeling the hit, which is contributing to record layoffs, 5 million last week, bringing the total of the last month to 20 million. Now, a key tool to stop the layoffs was the Paycheck Protection Program, which was a part of the CARES Act. Now, attempts to add more money to the program have been blocked by Senate Democrats. And as I mentioned earlier, new CDC guidelines, which puts forth a plan of reopening the country in three phases, is about to be released by the president. Here with the latest on all of this and more is Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. Senator, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Well, Senator, last time we were talking, we were at the very final moments of the CARES Act being approved. It was being blocked then. There were efforts to try to stick unrelated measures in it, which to some degree they were successful. What now has been proposed is the Senate Majority Leader, who was on the program earlier the week talking about it, simply adding more money to a successful program that is helping small businesses stay afloat. What's the latest?
So the latest is that attempt earlier this afternoon resulted in, once again, Democrats blocking a clean bill to add $250 billion to, as you said, a successful program. A program, by the way, whose success is obviously measured by the fact that $350 billion was lent out in small increments, you know, to small businesses in fewer than 2 weeks. And, you know, that obviously the demand is out there. While there were some glitches early on in the program, They worked through those, and banks were able to get way more applications than were required to get to the $350 billion. So clearly it needs more money. Senator McConnell has tried again today to bring it up, and evidently was blocked by Democrats, who want, once again, to add a bunch of things, other some of them may be good programs and good ideas. But here we have a successful program that's already got bipartisan support, negotiated, you know, by good members from both sides of the political aisle. And all we want to do is keep that momentum going and see how the other things work out before we add to them. And they just seem to want to use every moment to, you know, to add political extreme ideas and programs onto, you know, force it onto the public.
Well, as the president in just about an hour is going to talk about the three phases to reopen our economy and our country, this is a vital part of that. And being from North Dakota, you've kind of gotten a double whammy, not only from the impact of the virus, but with the drop in oil prices because of Saudi and the Saudis and the Russians and what they teamed up to do to basically push the U.S. out of oil production. Your state is really hurting, is it not?
Well, it is, Tony, but we also are a state of self-reliant people who are very resilient. The reopening plan, by the way, I think is, you know, North Dakota is a sort of a place where I think you could experiment quite a bit with this, because we've basically been a flat, you know, at a flat line from the beginning of this. In fact, today I think we had 28 new cases, which is the largest number we've had reported in a single day. But they've all been in that, you know, sort of mid-teens to mid-20s for several weeks now. And we are not a state, we're one of the few states that does not have a stay-at-home order. We have a lot of common sense. We follow the guidelines. Our governor, Doug Burgum, does an excellent job of communicating those guidelines to people. People are compliant as long as they feel the government is being fair with them and respectful. And I talked to the president today. Of course, I was on the conference call with other colleagues of the task force, but he and I had a private conversation afterwards on the phone. None has ever honored cooperative federalism like this president, and it's evident in things like Water to the U.S., you know, the Affordable Clean Energy Act, and a whole host of other regulations and rules. But it's also been true through this pandemic, where he has provided with the great resources and access to information that he has, and listening, and to his credit, too, he listens to everybody, not just one segment, but to everybody, and then makes a decision based on the whole of government approach, as he likes to call it, and then provides the guidelines that then governors apply to the context of their particular area. And I think reopening the government in the same manner makes all this, or reopening the economy, I'm sorry, in the same manner makes all the sense. And so I just really wanted to encourage him in that way, that to, you know, use these wonderful 50 states that we have that the founders gave us, and also realize, and we're seeing this certainly in Michigan, that the exceptionalism of the American experiment isn't democracy. There's lots of democracies, and well, it's a fact that we're self-governed, and the American public itself is going to have a fair bit to say about this.
Well, it's a very important point you brought up. One, I just want to echo the fact that my experience with the president is that he does listen. He takes in all of that information and then makes decisions. This, you talk about federalism, that's clearly reflected in this plan called the Work for America, Getting America Open Again. And it relies very heavily on the states and the local governments following the federal guidance, but making developing plans that work for them based upon what's happening in their locales.
Well, I love one of the things the president said today on the phone. He said, do you know that 24% of the counties in the United States have no incident of coronavirus? Well, how do you know, you have to acknowledge that and account for that in the reopening plan and recognize that fact. And you can only do that if you recognize the states and the local governments. And so clearly he has that in mind. And I, this is one of the things I appreciate the most about him, quite honestly.
You would have to say that when we step back, you look at this, given the projections that we initially had that were pretty dire, that the efforts taken by the administration have been successful in accomplishing of keeping this thing down, keeping it manageable, and sparing America from what could have been horrific.
You know, it's interesting, Tony. It's I kind of equate it to the Green Bay Packers, and we're not Packer fans in North Dakota. We're largely Minnesota Viking fans. But last year, the Green Bay Packers did not win the Super Bowl, but they won nearly every game throughout the year. And yet, throughout the entire season, we heard about the tough season that the Packers were having, and yet they were winning all of the time. And with the president, by the measure of history, and by the measure of, to your point, what was projected to have been the worst-case scenario and even the medium worst-case scenario and maybe a little less worst-case scenario, he has come out with almost the best-case scenario to this point. He will always be judged by the mainstream media and people on the left in the context of what perfection should have been in 2020. But when you think of what's happened day to day to day, I don't really – could you look back, yes, and say this could have been done better, that could have been done better – but I don't know how you could have asked for more from him and from his administration than he's provided in terms of this pandemic and getting us through it. And we're not through it, clearly, but at least I think we can see the other side now.
I think you're right, Senator Cramer, and I think the president has provided tremendous leadership. And you look at some countries that were hit in a much more significant way when it comes to, per capita deaths and illnesses from this. I want to go to another point that you made, Senator Cramer, about, we are a democracy, a constitutional republic, but we govern ourselves, but we're fiercely independent, and we desire our freedom. You know that, North Dakota. But what we saw in Michigan, and I communicated this to the White House this morning in a conversation, that I think Americans are complying. When it makes sense, they're complying. But when it doesn't make sense, they're going to fight for their freedom. And I think some people's patience are wearing thin.
There's no question, and Michigan seems to be a little bit of ground zero on that. You're seeing it everywhere. I will tell you, I see it driving around Bismarck. And what I mean by that is, while people remain compliant and they're willing to give you your space, and of course, I think I always like to remind people, we do have one square mile for every 10 people in this state, so it comes rather naturally to us. But I'm seeing a little more traffic every day. People are venturing out. Now, it's also springtime in the prairies, and it's getting nicer, and it comes a little later here than it does other places. But people are going to naturally venture out. They're going to see that if they continue this common sense practice of social distancing, wearing a face mask, just again, applying what we know and what we've learned. Let's be fair. I mean, we've learned a lot about washing hands and not touching our face and those things. People are going to take this into their own hands anyway. And I think that it's best when government can sort of follow the lead of people as well as the other way around.
Yeah, that's what makes our country work. Senator Cramer, thanks so much for joining us today. Always great to have you on the program.
It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. I've been invited many times to North Carolina, only state in the nation I haven't been to, but I'm always invited in the wintertime. And it's the coldest place in America. Am I going to go there in the wintertime? All right, coming up next, confidence is increasing that the coronavirus outbreak originated in a laboratory in Wuhan. We're going to talk about that next with Gordon Chang. Don't go away. A lot more Washington Watch to come. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men. Tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. All right, on the way out of the last segment, I said North Carolina. I meant North Dakota. My wife texted me and said I got it wrong. So I'm correcting myself. All right, I've been listening to Joe Biden too much. Anyway, confidence is increasing that the coronavirus outbreak originated in a Wuhan lab as a part of China's efforts to compete with U.S. medical research. Now, here's a clip from yesterday's coronavirus task force press conference with John Roberts of Fox News asking this question of the president.
Sources are telling Fox News today that the United States government now has high confidence that while the coronavirus is a naturally occurring virus, it emanated from a virology lab in Wuhan, that because of lax safety protocols, an intern was infected, who later infected her boyfriend, and then went to the wet market in Wuhan, where it began to spread. Does that correspond with what you have heard from officials?
Well, I don't want to say that, John, but I will tell you more and more we're hearing the story. And we'll see. When you say multiple sources, now there's a case where you can use the word sources. But we are doing a very thorough examination of this horrible situation that happened.
Well, on February the 10th, my next guest was here on Washington Watch, suggesting just that. Joining me now is Gordon Chang, the author of The Coming Collapse of China. And you can make sure to follow Gordon on Twitter, at Gordon G. Chang. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Gordon, at the beginning of the program, I played a clip from your interview on February the 10th, where you said there was evidence, or at least there was such evidence that would suggest that this could have come from a laboratory in Wuhan.
Yes, and since that time, we've learned a lot more. The most important thing is that on January 24, the Lancet, which is the authoritative British medical journal, said that many of the initial cases of COVID-19 had no connection with the wet market, which meant that there had to be another source. Since that time, we've learned more. So, for instance, everyone's talking about bats. Bats were not sold at the wet market in question, and the list goes on and on. One other thing, Tony. About 2 weeks ago, China started opening up its wet markets across the country. That's an indication that Beijing does not think that wet markets were the source of the coronavirus. So why would they open them up if they thought there was going to be another epidemic? I think that right now we can say that the virology lab in Wuhan is the source of the epidemic. Beijing knows. Beijing should tell us. The question is, what is Beijing hiding right now?
Well, that raises a lot of questions, because they've hidden facts from the very beginning. They knew early on that this was being communicated, transferred from human to human. They denied that, covered that up. Now there's evidence mounting that it did come from a laboratory. The question is, if it was in a laboratory and they were not doing anything, you know, bad, why would they not tell us? What might they have been doing in the laboratory with this?
I think the answer to the question is that Beijing is terribly concerned that the whole reputation of China's scientific community is going to be tattered because of the release of the coronavirus. And remember, this is a P4 lab. This is the highest level of security for a biological lab. And that indicates that China has been basically incompetent in protecting the contents of the lab. Remember, the Wuhan Institute of Virology used to note on its website that it kept 1,500 strains of coronavirus inside. And apparently right now we have seen that their protocols are terribly insufficient.
So, I mean, everything I've seen suggests that this is natural, but is there any genetic modification of this that we know of?
There is a paper by three virologists that talked about the splicing of the coronavirus. That paper was withdrawn. At the present moment, the weight of scientific evidence suggests that this was a naturally occurring virus that was accidentally released. But the one thing that we do know for sure, Tony, is that Beijing has done its best to prevent the foreign international community from actually studying the coronavirus. So we don't have virologists or epidemiologists on site in Wuhan working with their Chinese counterparts. And in fact, over the last 10 days, Beijing has been implementing new rules that any scientific paper on the origin of the coronavirus has first got to go to Beijing to get approval before it can be published. That's another indication that Beijing knows it came from this lab.
Well, Gordon Chang, let me ask you another question beyond the actual makeup of this virus, but let's talk about the lab and the lack of security there. What's the way forward here? I mean, I would think the international community, WHO, which has obviously been compromised in this, who is going to ensure that there are standards that for these type of laboratories, that this does not happen again? I mean, this has brought down the entire world economy.
Yes, it has. It's by the time that it's done, it will kill hundreds of thousands of people. It will sicken millions of people. And the answer to your question is, the United States, for all its power, does not have the ability to make sure that that Wuhan lab adheres to the proper protocols, which means that we really have to reduce our contacts with China to protect ourselves in the future. If you can't reform the system, you've got to cut it off. And that, although that's unfortunate, and a lot of people don't want to do that, the question is, we can't afford to go through another pandemic. And these diseases periodically are generated in China, and sometimes they escape to the rest of the world. We can't allow that to happen again.
So you're talking about global distancing.
Absolutely. And I think that we're going to have to go to a situation very much like the Cold War with the Soviet Union, because at this point, China has shown that it's not able to reform itself.
Well, Gordon Chang, you know your stuff. You were saying this 2 months ago. So thanks so much for joining us, and we will continue to track this, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Gordon Chang, Gordon G. Chang on Twitter, if you'd like to follow him. All right, coming up, social media giants, Facebook, Twitter, and others, are now censoring their content, saying that they're not going to allow coronavirus conspiracy theories like what we just heard about. Can we trust them? Listen to this when we come back. who they are being advised by. This, you won't believe this. Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas is here next. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities." And many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, big social media giants like Facebook and Twitter are now censoring content that they believe falls into the category of coronavirus conspiracy theories. I mean, you may have seen your own post removed because it was not pandemic appropriate. You know, what do we do about this? But here's the kicker. These social media giants, in fact, I think it was Twitter, they are looking to none other than the World Health Organization as their source of information. The very organization that was providing cover for China that was covering up the spread of the coronavirus. What do we do about this? This is a huge threat to the freedom of speech. Joining me now to talk about this is Louie Gohmert, who serves as the congressman for the 1st District of the Lone Star State. He's a member of the House Judiciary Committee and a great American and a dear friend. Louie, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's great to be on. It's great to be a dear friend of yours. But this is a huge problem, and you and I have talked about it before. But it's just become a bigger and bigger problem. And we've had hearings in the Judiciary Committee having representatives from the different internet giants. And one of them made the mistake in responding to me to saying, look, we just want to be treated just like Fox News, and thought he was being very clever. And I said, exactly. Fox News can be sued for having, you know, the wrong, libelous things up. And you're protected by sections 230. We got to change that. We have got to make these internet giants liable for pushing an agenda. I mean, originally I can see why section 230 was put there, because they were saying we're like the town square. Anybody can come in and say anything. And now we know that's not true. And
right.
Specifically on this pandemic, they're pushing. Well, like you said, apparently they're using the World Health Organization, which was nothing but a propagandist machine for China itself. as others have said, they've got blood on their hands. They covered up the problem where it came from. They encouraged the travel of people from places where and to places where they created this pandemic. And they, the World Health Organization, with over $400 million to $500 million dollars that the United States taxpayers have given them, they've used it to help spread disease and death around the world. It's time. Oh, and don't you feel sorry for the celebrities? They are acting out of ignorance. The Trump derangement, if he's saying we need to hold up funding, then it must be something we need to help. And they're not using their brains as they should. But this, it's a real problem when the tech giants have this kind of censorship, more than the government could ever have.
Well, it's right. And they, as you said, originally holding themselves out as a town square was the freedom of speech, and so they didn't want to be held liable for what someone might say. But before you came on in the previous segment, I had Gordon Chang on, Asian expert,
right,
who
on
my program on February the 10th, he said that there is evidence to suggest that this virus came from a lab near Wuhan, China. Now, that's a conspiracy theory. Yeah, and it's a conspiracy theory that these social media giants, I don't know if they censored any of his posts, but it would fall into that category. And now, well, it's proven to be true. You can't stifle speech and maintain a republic such as ours. I don't care if you're Facebook. I don't care if you're Twitter. You know, that's a part of America that is essential to us continuing as a free republic.
Well, and exactly. And you also, to maintain a free state, a free market system, you have to have media doing the job of being objective, at least a big part of it. And as we know, over 90% of all the stories about President Trump have been negative. Nobody is that bad. George Soros isn't that bad. I mean, for heaven's sake, we have got to get media to do the job of pursuing free speech and truth. And as I used to love to hear on TV, truth, justice, and the American way. And this is not it when you have this kind of censorship from people that absolutely control the internet, that is the most important communication system we have right now.
Well, and the internet became the balance, the counterbalance to the media that has always been tilted left. It just after Barack Obama's election to president, they became hard left turn, and they've continued to go in that direction. And so the internet was the only place to counterbalance that. And now of course, this might fall into the conspiracy category. I think they're working with big media to keep American people from having that open conversation. Louis, we're up against a break. Can you stick around?
Sure.
All right.
You bet.
All right. Louis Gohmert's going to stick around. I got a couple more questions for him. Then coming up, Ralph Reed's going to be joining us. New book out. And he's going to be here to tell us all about it. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come on the other side of this break. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast, so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast, called Lecture Me, was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, as we mentioned at the top of the program, in about less than 20 minutes, President Trump is going to announce a three-phased plan on how to get America moving again, kind of a reopening America, Work for America, title of a 10-page document, at least the draft was, by the CDC, giving three phases. Beginning now, going up until May 1st, where May 1st we begin to see jurisdictions that are closed opened back up. It's based upon the readiness of the areas, the density of the coronavirus cases, a whole host of things that they'll be looking at. But there's a path forward, and you'll be hearing more about this, I'm sure, in the next 24 hours, as the president lays that out. We're talking with Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas. Louie, thanks for sticking around. Talking about big social media and how they are censoring information on their platforms. Now, look, I know they're private companies, but they hold themselves out as being a virtual public square. And one of the areas that they're focusing on, which I don't necessarily disagree with, is they are targeting these, hucksters that are selling remedies to the coronavirus and not allowing them to do that. But they throw in there these conspiracy theories, which, you know, again, we were talking with Gordon Chang. What he said 2 months ago was considered to be a conspiracy theory, and now it's proven to be true. So, Louis, you talked about the immunity standard or the immunity benefits that social media has versus the regular media. Is that the only leverage that Congress might have over these social media giants?
Well, actually, I mean, there could be laws passed, and there have been the left, the Democratic majority now has been wanting what they call the fairness doctrine. They're great at coming up with names of bills that are exactly 180 degrees from what they say they are in the title. And that would be government regulation. We need to regulate the internet. And what they're saying is we need to regulate conservative speech,
right,
and leave left-wing extremist speech out there untouched. So most of the conservatives I know don't want more regulation.
Right.
And I have felt like the best answer is to just make them liable for censorship. And, you know, a good example, Diamond and Silk testified at one of our hearings, and they're wonderful, they're good friends, and they pointed out that they paid an extra fee to have their names come up. Well, it turns out they were using an algorithm that sent their search name even further down. Well, they ought to be guilty and suable for fraud.
Yeah.
That's fraud. And anybody, you take a fee and you do the opposite of what you took the fee to do, but they're not liable for that. We make them liable and they start having to answer some class action lawsuits on people that have been hurt by their fraud or by their lies or by their censorship. Then you'll see more sensitivity among these left-wing groups. And you've seen, you know, we hear from whistleblowers, Project Veritas and others have exposed some of the hypocrisy and the left-leaning, not just left-leaning, but just pure leftist approaches by these internet giants. We ought to not let them get away with claiming to be town squares like they did when they got this legal immunity.
Right. So one final question for you. What are the prospects then, Congressman Gohmert, that we might see that law change where they will be held accountable?
Well, it's not going to happen while the Democrats are in the majority in the House or the Senate. They've made that clear. They see these internet giants as their best hope to getting back the White House and both houses. If they can just, help these internet giants accomplish the defeat of President Trump. And in fact, you saw that we found out that when Senator Elizabeth Warren was talking about breaking up Google, you know, that they were coming. Doesn't she know that the only way we can beat President Trump is to keep us as a whole? We can't be broken up. And most liberals realize that that's their effective tool. They're not going to let them be held liable for their lies, for their censorships. And so that's a problem. But we got to keep public ridicule can make a difference in the public square.
All right. Congressman Louis Gohmert, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Take care. Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas's 1st Congressional District. All right. We're coming up on another election. Yes. And, of course, we've been talking about how the laws are changing in some states, mail voting by mail and the issues related to that. But also a number of Christians asking the questions, well, you know, I don't know about Trump. What kind of president has he been? Look, his policies speak for himself, for himself. I mean, the policies speak for themselves. There's no comparison. In fact, I've got a document for you that you can use. It's about 5 pages, and it's just a list, chronological, all facts, of the life policies, the religious freedom policies, the family policies that this administration has advanced. In fact, I'll send it to you. Just text this number, 51555. It's 51555. Text the word actions. That's plural, actions, to 51555. And it'll come in a format you can share with your friends. Very helpful. And for those that have any question, this should resolve it, because there has been no administration that has been more favorable to the values that you and I care about than this one. So text the word actions to 51555. And an even better resource for you is a new book that is out that makes the case. It's called For God and Country, The Christian Case for Trump. The author joins me now, Ralph Reed. He is with the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Ralph, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Tony. Thank you for having me.
All right, tell our listeners, I mean, the title pretty much says it all, but unpack it for our listeners.
Yeah, it's not an ambiguous title, is it, Tony?
No, that's one thing I like about you, Ralph. I always know where you stand.
Right. You know, Tony, I wrote this book really not primarily as a defense of President Trump, though I do plenty of that, believe me. I really wrote it as a defense of the faith community because I just became tired of seeing them smeared, insulted, demeaned, their integrity questioned. They've been called every name in the book, from hypocrites to spiritual frauds to people who sold their soul for 30 pieces of silver, for people who compromise the gospel for access to power. You've seen it. It's been said about you. It's been said about me. But more importantly, it's been said about tens of millions of God-fearing Americans, deeply committed Bible-believing Christians, whose only sin, Tony, was to take their citizenship seriously and to back Donald Trump and his pro-life policies. And I felt that it was time to defend them and to argue that they not only made the right political choice in 2016, they made the right moral, ethical, and biblical choice. And that's why I think they're going to turn out an even larger numbers for Donald Trump in 2020.
Well, clearly, the evidence is there for what this administration has done. It's not just political rhetoric, which we have grown accustomed to hearing in this country, but his administration has amassed a significant record on these issues, unlike anything we've seen before.
Yeah, and I think I could really sum it up in four words: promises made, promises kept. And you've got the five-pager, which I urge all of your listeners to text that number and get it. I have a 30-page index in the book that details all the accomplishments of this administration, and I'll just highlight a couple that I know you've talked about on your show. Number one, this was the first time, Tony, that there was a vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court on Election Day that decided the ideological balance of the court. Since 1860, when Abraham Lincoln was elected, there was a Jacksonian pro-slavery Democrat who died in May of 1860, and James Buchanan, the president, couldn't get it filled. There were four Southerners and four Northerners on the court, so everybody who went to the polls in 1860 knew that electing the president meant changing that court. It's only happened twice in American history, and Donald Trump, unlike Lincoln, as you well know, because you were there, you were in the room.
Not with Lincoln, but with Trump.
Yeah, with Trump. He's the first major party nominee in American history, Tony, who released a list of initially 12 and ultimately 21 jurists and said, if you elect me, I'm going to choose one of those 21. That had never happened before.
Now, very significant.
You and I, very significant, and I think you would probably, I don't know if we've ever had a chance to talk about this, but I think you would probably agree there. I think it's questionable whether Trump would have ever been elected president without that Supreme Court vacancy. Because when he made that commitment, people knew that on life, on religious freedom, the Hobby Lobby case, the Little Sisters of the Poor, all these cases would be decided.
Right.
And he kept his word. And then the other one I would mention is the life issue. There are so many, but to do what he's done, to take steps to defund Planned Parenthood, to do what he did, not just to reinstate, but as you know, Tony, to strengthen and expand the Mexico City policy, to be the first president to ever address the March for Life, to use the bully pulpit of his office to defend the unborn, the elderly, the infirm, and the sanctity of life. The point is, Christians made a very difficult decision in 2016. It was not an easy call. They wrestled with it. They prayed over it. they fasted, and they made the right call. They've been vindicated by his record. He's been vindicated. He kept his word, and now we got to make sure he stays there for another 4 years.
Yeah, the one thing I have really found about him, Ralph, by the way, Ralph Reed's new book, For God and Country, the Christian case for Trump. I assume it's available Amazon and every place else?
Yes, it's wherever books are sold, including Amazon.
Unfortunately, you can't get out of the house to get it, so call Amazon. For God and Country, the case for Trump. When you look at Donald Trump, he did not forget the evangelicals after he was in the White House and elected. In fact, every time we see him, pretty much, he reminds us of the fact that evangelicals voted for him and put him in the White House. He continues to, as you said, keep the promises made. That is, I'm telling you, that's not the standard in politics in America, at least not in modern time.
No, and I think the reason why I wrote the book, because it wasn't like I had a lot of time on my hands, but I felt it was important. I wanted to make, as the subtitle says, Tony, the Christian case for Trump. There's been a lot of loose sort of theological gobbledygook out there that says, well, you know, how could you, as a committed Christian, get behind a man who's a thrice married billionaire from Manhattan, who had a background as a playboy and was tabloid fodder in New York for decades, and who occasionally tweets or says something that's coarse in its language? How could you do that? And I make the very strong argument, I'm not a theologian, I'm not a preacher, but I believe if you look at the Old and the New Testament, it is replete with examples of where God's people went to someone. In the case of the Apostle Paul, he went all the way to Caesar to defend his rights against those who tried to deny him his rights as a Roman citizen. Now, he didn't just say, beat up on me because I'm a Christian, although he ultimately gave his life for Christ. But by exercising his citizenship in a muscular and a robust way, the Bible makes clear that he took the gospel all the way to the courts of Caesar. And there were members of Caesar's household that came to Christ as a result. And my argument is, if you have somebody like Trump, who I'm not saying he's perfect, I'm not saying he's without flaws, but if he agrees to defend our God-given rights to life and religious freedom and stand for what's morally good, and if we, by defending him and working with him to advance those moral goods, can shine a light in places where it otherwise might not go, that not only, I think, is the moral and ethical thing to do, I think it's our charge as Christians.
Yes, and it's happening. That's exactly what is happening all around the world. I can attest to it. Ralph Reed, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. His new book, For God and Country, The Christian Case for Trump. Get a copy of it. Ralph, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you so much.
All right. All right, folks, thank you for joining us as well. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found at Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.